Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. Unfortunately, we no longer have a game to look ahead to this weekend in the Guinness Six Nations, but we are joined by Scottish Rugby Chief Executive Mark Dodson, who starts off the podcast by giving us his take on the opening fixtures between England and Wales.
I was top of highs and lows in the roller coaster that is Scottish rugby. I mean, it was there for all to see. One of the most complete, if not the most complete, performance I've ever witnessed in my time up here with the Scotland national team against England. I mean, it was as close to a perfect performance as we've seen. Arguably, we could have put more points on the board in terms of intensity and precision. And the lack of errors, it was terrific to watch, and that's been a huge boost to us to start the Six Nations with an away win, which is not something we've done in the past. I think we're all massively up for us going to the Welsh game and making it 2 out of 2. And the frustration for me and the real disappointment for everybody was the fact that we did enough to win that game twice over and we still contrived to find a way to lose it, you know? Mm. And I found that was the most disappointing thing. Probably should have put that game to bed earlier. The 14-point swing with the disallowed try and then conceding at the other end, all those things have been well documented. But this is part of a growing process with this group of players. We have to cut those kind of errors out. The error count went back up again away from the England game. And I just know that I've never seen the group as low, the coaching group as low, as playing group as low as they were after that defeat. So disappointing. And as you say, Chris, we're all ready now to go back and put it right in Paris, and we want the opportunity to be able to do that.
You mentioned the kind of growing squad environment that we've got there. There's a lot of young players coming into the squad, the likes of Jamie Dobby now training with the squad full time. Do you think this is a bit of an insight into the future and kind of how exciting things are going to get for Scottish rugby?
I think so. I was up at Orium yesterday, and you know, it was great to see Ben Muncaster and Jamie Dolby, you know, in the team room, you know, getting the experience again from the older players. You know, as you earlier this season, we've had Rory Darge in there as well, we've had Rufus McLean, and it's part of their experience of growing as international players. And these guys have been selected for their potential. But when you look at Dobie particularly, and you look at some other players, they're almost maturing in front of your eyes. You saw that in the Glasgow game last week. You know, he's growing every time you see him play. And what we've got to do is give these guys exposure. One of the big problems, and Chris and I both know this, when we first came, when I came in 2011, we weren't putting players into the international arena until they were 22 to 23. And the fact of the matter is now we're producing athletes at 18 and 19 and 20 years old who are ready to go. And what we've got to do is have faith in our academy system, faith in our pro teams. And I think Greg is of the mood and the coaching group, these guys are young enough to be in. Look at Darcy Graham and the success he's had. So my view is it's more power to their elbow. The more of these young players that we can experience in the international environment before games is absolutely spot on as a strategy.
I would add to that as well, Mark. I'm lucky enough to be kind of in and around training, and not only that, what you mentioned there about the influence of the senior players around about the players in the team, when you see them train, it's not as if they've been invited to train. Do you know, I think in the past, certainly squads we've been involved in, now young players, you know, people would kind of tend to look after them, yes, but it would be a tiptoeing around the edge. These lads, Ben Muncaster, Rory Darge, even before Dobie, as you've meant, Matt Carey as well, Rufus, they're training for real, and they're up to speed. A lot's being asked of them, but they're delivering as well, which is great to see, because when you see them involved and you see them listed, I think in the past, Al, it was almost seen as almost a stepping stone. But here, there's no prisoners. You're there. You're there to train, and you're there on merit, and they're doing well.
Yeah, Mark, you must, like, to Mossy's point there. Like, I take Jamie Dobby as an example. For me, Jamie Dobby was probably the best player on the park on Friday night in that Glasgow Ulster game. He was absolutely outstanding. And if the game had gone the other way, then he would undoubtedly be running a match. But that must give you a lot of confidence as well. Is that they're coming in, at Chris's point, more established than some of the young lads that would have been invited in before?
Yeah, I mean, you remember, Al, when New South Wales in 2012, we went down there to Australia. Chris, you remember as well, you know, we were sat there, that squad, we had a conversation about it. We were trying to get who else would have been in that squad of 32, yeah? If we had more players, and we couldn't think of more players who would be at international level. Now we're choosing from a squad potentially 50 players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 50 players that can easily be considered for a Scotland shirt. But then we've got all these younger players coming through as well. The depth is unbelievable compared with where it was, 10 years ago. But more importantly, the problem is that everybody else is growing. Other teams are growing fast. The Ireland are pushing youth through. You saw the Welsh halfbacks that came on in that game. Both of them. Other players that have, the Welsh have blooded as well. All the nations now, especially this young crop of under 20s players that are coming through the French system. We've got to be bold. And like Al said, you know, I don't think Jamie Dobie look out of place playing ninth anytime soon.
No. And that's just the guys who are involved at the moment off the top of the head. You think back, there's Ollie Smith at Glasgow, Harry Patterson's a young player at Edinburgh, Dan Gamble's had time, Ross Thompson's turned in a player of the match performance. So there's, you mentioned the depth that are, you know, creeping in and around the international level, but these are the players that have to be a big part of the professional teams going forward as well, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think the other thing as well, they're going to put pressure on the more established players who are still young, people like Luke Crosby's, Magnus Bradbury's,
Paul
Gordon's. They're going to have to really step up now to make sure they can stay in those teams, because the next generation are ready to go. And I think it's going to put pressure right away through the age groups in professional teams, because we're now producing athletes who can make a real difference, both at pro level and international level.
And how important is that? I mean, obviously from a rugby perspective, being on the field, but from a business perspective, it's utterly vital, I assume, that you produce your own in terms of the cost of player salaries now, for example, or bring players in. It's an important strategy, isn't it?
It is, and I think, you know, we get a lot of sticks sometimes about, you know, the academy pathways, and we bring players in from either an English system or whatever. We've got an age grade system that is producing players now from not only Scotland, but from the UK generally. We're bringing players in who are not project players, but they have Scottish heritage and they're playing. We have the South African players, we've got project players that have come in and done a great job. But when you look at the Van der Mervers, the Schumann coming up, the Van der Velts and these players, they're filling holes where we had problems with our depth charge. I'm hoping we don't have those problems going forward to bring this next generation of players through. But in terms of the quality of play, and you mentioned a few there that we haven't mentioned, you know, the Ollie Smiths and others, these are the next caps on the rank as far as I'm concerned. They're going to be playing a lot of rugby in the next 18 months for their clubs.
There's also that sprinkling of talent as well. I mean, I think Jack Dempsey, for me, coming into Glasgow next year is a proper hardened international dynamic player. Josh Mackay, big things expected as well. Re-signings of Hamish Watson and Jamie Ritchie at Edinburgh. So that depth coming through, but there's established depth and there's experience in there. And it is, I suppose, the coaches and all the staff's job to marry that all together to make us successful for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think one of the things that people don't fully understand is that because we've only got two pro clubs, when the Scotland team comes together, we lose an awful lot of players from Glasgow and Edinburgh. And the coaches that we've got there in Glasgow and Edinburgh are highly competitive animals who are there to win. Our supporters in Glasgow and Edinburgh want us to win. So the problem we've got is, how do we lose 10 or 15 international players to the Scottish national team, but still maintain our competitiveness? Your players that are going to be there for the whole season, not taken away. That's where the Dempseys of this world came in. That's where the Schumann there, and we're going to have, I think our ambition is to make sure that the players we're bringing in now are not what people have classed as journeymen to fill in players who've gone to the national squad, but extremely high quality players who can actually deliver to the pro clubs and the pro coaches to help them get through those times when there's been overlap between the international and the pro games.
You mentioned pro teams then, so give us a kind of a your viewpoint on the current situation with both Glasgow and Edinburgh. I suppose maybe a challenging season for both, but what's your take on both teams?
I think it's been a disappointing season for both teams. But, you know, when you look at the challenges that they've had, both Richard at Edinburgh and also Danny, particularly over at Glasgow, this has been an extraordinary season. If you add the fact that they didn't have a pre-season at all where they were able to get close to the players and you've got player exchanges, people coming in and coming out of the squad, you've then got this extraordinary long autumn Nations Cup where the players were in a bubble and weren't released back. And on top of that, we had a fairly big injury crisis at the same time. And then we had games postponed because of bad weather on top of that. So it's been stop, go, stop, go, stop a long time. And the players are not able to string games together, either for the club, or then they move to internationals, or they get injured, or there's a problem with the weather. They've not been able to string a game performances that allow the coaches to produce a settled team. Now, obviously, we're not going to make excuses. We've explained to both Danny and Richard that things have got to get better. But this is not a season to judge anybody. This is an extraordinary season. What we've got to do is look for next season, look at the player acquisition that we're doing now, the signings we've made, and Chris touched on it before. We've kept all our talent, all our major talent, Scottish talent, has been kept here. All our young talent has been secured. The only players that we've lost of international calibre at the moment have been Duane van der Merwe and Adam Hastings. And that was a COVID issue. It's about the budget hiatus between what we were dealing with and what we were able to spend. And obviously, they were snapped up by other teams who didn't have the same rigours on their own expenditure at that time. But that's life. We're always going to lose players from Scotland who want to experience different things. But going back to the original point, which I think Chris and Alan brought up, we've now got a pipeline of players coming through to replace the talent that we do, unfortunately, lose. But it's not our ambition is to keep the very best talent we can in Scotland going forward.
Well, one thing we've talked about in this podcast before is the challenges, the nature of the season as it's been, has to create more resilient players. And the most resilient players in the world are always the best players in the world. It's always a factor that's in there. Do you see that coming out the other side? Not just resilient players, but resilient coaching teams and a resilience around the business that the challenges will push forward.
Yeah, I think we've got to see this as a real learning experience. I mean, I'm hoping that next year in Pro 14 or Pro 16, we won't have the same level of overlap in the international periods. And that will help us enormously. But when you look at the very best teams in our league, the Leinsters and the Munsters, they've got there through having rigorous plans, a good, strong academy, signing highly talented international quality players, and bringing together that sense of belonging and that sense of team. Now, for a long time, Glasgow embodied that for Scottish rugby. Glasgow was where the culture was, Glasgow was where the passion was and the crowd, and Edinburgh fell somewhere behind that. Richard's brought that, you know, to bear now in Edinburgh. We've got both of the clubs now have a real identity and a real ambition to win. This season has to be seen as a learning exercise. Otherwise, what's the point? I think we're going to make sure that a lot of our younger players are blooded. We're going to make big changes in both squads as we go through this, so we're prepared for the next season and ready to go. But no, we're not rolling over and lying down and saying we're not going to compete. We're going to compete hard for to the end of the season here. But you will see an accent on youth.
On that, Mark, I don't know if you know any more or can share any more in terms of the Rainbow Cup, but that's going to be hopefully a hard competition that would underline that. You're asking potentially young players or younger players to deliver. That's exactly what you want to do. That's exactly how we want to test them. Do we know any update on the Rainbow Cup? And I suppose it's likelihood.
I think the problem is just simply from a medical perspective and player welfare perspective. If we try and take the rugby out of the way for a moment, Chris, we've just got to do what's right for player welfare. But I agree with you, the Rainbow Cup would be an incredible test for our two clubs. And being honest, if they're going to be more resilient in the league and more resilient in Europe, those are exactly the tests that we need. I mean, can you imagine playing against the Sharks in Khaleesi, or playing against a revitalised Bulls at Pretoria? We're going to have the best four teams in South Africa competing in the Pro 14. It's going to be unbelievably good for the standard of play, the variety of play, and we're going to see real superstars either through the Rainbow Cup or indeed in any Pro 16 competition that is yet to be agreed. But if that comes through as well, you're going to have the most amazing talent coming through the Scotland playing rugby. And that, for those young kids we just talked about, is unbelievable. But for our most experienced pros, they're only going to get better by playing the best.
And Mark, just on that point then around, you know, the Rainbow Cup, obviously this has been a year where, you know, rugby could probably make these big decisions and make changes, not be afraid to kind of maybe change the dial a bit on maybe old kind of procedures and going on. So is there any kind of update on maybe World Rugby? I know they was talking about kind of looking at the calendar, changing the windows. Is there any kind of update on World Rugby or that Scottish Rugby is involved in and maybe the game evolving during this time?
Yeah, there's tons of work going on. I sit on the Professional Game Committee for World Rugby Irish at Scotland on that body. And we're looking at the global season as we stand. We're going to meet it, I think, again later this week, where we're trying to look at the appropriate window. We're trying to look at how do we fit the club and international calendar. You've heard talk of, you know, the World Club Championship. How would you accommodate that? How do we make the balance between the Northern and Southern Hemispheres work? Do we make the autumn schedule more competitive through a more of a tournament as opposed to just friendly games? How do we monetize it? How do we make it better for rugby? But most importantly, how do we deal with player welfare and the travel? So all those things are going on. I don't think there's any one single silver bullet solution. But what I think COVID's made everybody do, both club and country, and the global governing body, is to say, look, guys, we've been through a tremendous shock to the system here, both from a business and rugby sense. We have to reset. We have to be more open-minded than we've ever been before. We may have to let go of some of those sacred cows that we've always, you know, clung on to and protected. And I think that's going to have a new foundation for the game going forward. But this is, if it was easy, Jamie, we would have done it years ago. This is an incredibly difficult thing. And I've always said, the only thing wrong with the global calendar is we just need 62 weeks to play it instead of 52, you know? If you take 52 and have 48 with Samuel player rest, you are putting a quart into a pint pot. We need a 62-week season to keep everybody happy. So we're going to have to be people giving ground across the piece, and that'll be the big test. But I do think that the change is on its way.
We've talked a lot about kind of having to adapt and things changing this year. How important do you think it is moving forward with the women's game in particular, with kind of the progress we've made in previous years to really protect that and keep them moving forward after going through, you know, what is such a shock to the rugby union, I guess?
Yeah, well, it's been a huge shock. But the one thing I can give you a guarantee on is that we're going to continue to invest in women's rugby at the same, if not a greater level than we've done already. The dividend, if you like, let's take the women's international team, the dividend that we've seen in terms of quality, in terms of passion, crowd, sponsors, output, it's all been there for everybody to see. So we've got to keep going on that regard. We owe the women players in this country the respect for the work that they put in. And what you'll see is that now CBC have come into the Six Nations, they will expect us to make sure that we have a general gender equality policy. They're not going to be interested in investing in a tournament that's only about men. They're going to want to see the women's game supercharged as well. The problem we've got with our sport is that there are almost three levels, international level. There's the real top teams, there's the middle teams, and then there's the bottom teams. And the problem is the time it's going to take for the bottom teams to be as good as the top teams is going to take time. So you're always compromised on fixtures, on audience, on the values and the metrics, and nobody wants to see teams get consistently beaten. But equally, the lower ranked sides want to play the best sides. Look at what we did against France earlier this year. I mean, an amazing game. You sat there and you're watching, you stood up and you just clapped, because that was just the most amazing performance by the Scottish women. But the truth of the matter is, the French system is so much more robust than us. You know? And what we've got to do is get there. So our plan, working with Gemma and working with Stevie, is to work and see how do we, within a world context and also a Six Nations context, take our women's game and make it bigger and stronger. And it's multifaceted. It's going to be around making sure there are regularly, daily training regimes that we can put in place for women players. Then we've got to find a place for a domestic structure. We've got to have a proper domestic structure in Scotland. And then we've got to look at an opportunity of either investing in the team or building a team that can play in a professional league. We tried, as you know, working with Lille, and we've got, you know, our players playing in England for individual teams. but we're going to have to have some kind of end game where we have a Scottish professional team run out of Edinburgh or Glasgow or just wherever it's going to run out of. But we have to have not just an international strategy, we have to have a player acquisition strategy. We then have to have a training facility which is local and meaningful and regular. Then we have to have a domestic structure, then an international team. All that takes money. All of that is going to take time. But I promise you, the money's going to be there and we're going to deliver on it.
On that as well, Matt, on the domestic structure, you mentioned massive shock, obviously, this year with all that's happened. In terms of planning for, you know, as we speak at the moment, there's roadmaps being announced daily, almost hourly, the changes to how we, you know, we progress out of the pandemic. But in terms of planning for the domestic game, is it a short to medium term is all you can do? Or do you plan longer term to get the grassroots back up and running again as well?
I think one of the things we've got used to, Chrissy, is planning and having that plan ripped apart.
Changed. Yeah.
And I think what we've got to do is just keep planning as if we're going to start in May, as if we're going to start in August, as if we're going to start in September. Whenever it is, we've got to be ready to return to rugby. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And Sheila Begbie and her rugby development department and all the colleagues working flat out on making sure that we find a way of playing which is as free as it possibly can be, given the government health regulations that run across that, you know, the protocols. We're not going to put any players in harm's way. But what we have to do is always take the temperature of what the government are recommending to us. It'd be very easy to say, I'll just step outside of government protocols and we'll do this. But what happens then if people get sick, if we find ourselves with COVID hotspots? We just can't do that. We're not in that business. So it does mean that we make plans and we rip those plans up, we make other plans, rip them up again. But again, what we're working on at the moment is a really smart return to rugby program. And we'll have to put results behind that because we haven't played rugby for the best part of 12 to 18 months by the time we get back. Mm-hmm. We may have lost players. We may have gained players we don't know about. Mm-hmm. We've got lost volunteers, lost coaches. People are not in the habit and the rhythm of playing rugby. And what we've got to do is to kickstart that and make sure that we give the resources and the support to every club that requires it across Scotland to restart rugby safely. And that means from a clubhouse perspective, it means from a training perspective, and it also means from a playing perspective. And that's what we're working on now. But I must admit, if I've seen one plan, I must have seen 50 plans of how we're going to get back. And it's just dispiriting. And to work in that environment where you know constantly you're going to be overtaken by events is really difficult. But that's our job and that's what we're going to go with.
It's quite funny. One thing you say there is maybe me having positive thinking, but I think if you starve people, or people have been starved of so many things over the last year, then you miss some more. So I just wonder if there is an opportunity to grow the numbers getting back. You know, you're absolutely right. People will have maybe lose to the game, but we might actually gain a lot of people desperate to get back in, reconnect with their club, reconnect with the community because it's not been available for so long. So here's hoping we can pick up a few more numbers left in the centre.
We're getting information around people who've got more interest now and then getting back started from than they've ever had in the last five or six seasons. Yeah, other things where people are worried about losing players. The truth is we don't know yet, but it comes back to your point, Chris. You're either an optimist or a pessimist about these things.
Yeah.
And I think the latent demand for rugby generally, sport generally, is going to be huge, whether it's playing and going down to train and just being free and being able to play, get fit, be with your mates again, go for a drink afterwards, get into pre-season training and play, or whether it's going to be able to go to Murrayfield. People say, oh, it's going to be really difficult to fill Murrayfield for the first autumn international. I don't think it will. I think there's going to be people who will be queuing up to share the experience. Forget the rugby, to share the experience of being with their friends, being out there, watching live sport at the very highest level in a great atmosphere, and seeing Edinburgh open up wide for people to come from all over the country to watch the game. I think the pencil demand is going to be there. So I'm very optimistic about every sector of the rugby. I think when people can get a chance to play, watch the pro team, when they want to play Super Six again, when they want to watch Premiership, National, Regional rugby, I sense there's going to be a real latent demand of people wanting to get back to normality.
Well, Mark, the rumour is that a certain veteran 10 from Gower has been running about with his boots on and is likely to get back into it next season. Is that right, Chris?
Who, Gregor Townsend?
Gregor Townsend, I was talking about you. Mark,
I know you're losing Adam Hastings, but I didn't think we were going to put Mossy in the team.
He's still training hard. I can vouch for that.
Stop it.
Mark, you talk about crowds coming back, and we really look as if we're, you know, on the front foot with that, and there's beginning to be great noises coming out. That, as you rightly point out, that'll be a lot government-led, but the negative side of the crowds not being there, as well as not being able to enjoy the passion and cheer on their team, has been a financial side as well. Clearly, there was significant help that came in from Scottish Government. But could you give us just a quick kind of state of the nation of where we are financially and how that is affecting all the planning that we're talking about moving forward?
Yeah, we had, a really tough time when all our revenue streams, basically, we just switched off overnight. You know, we lost. We've only got three main income streams. We've got ticketing, we've got broadcasting, we've got sponsorship, and two of those things were switched off overnight, and we have a responsibility to keep the game going. And nobody really knew whether it was a 3-week break, a 3-month break, or that. We had no idea. But as the seriousness of COVID became clear, it was obvious that we were going to lose a large part of the season and a huge part of our income. But we've also got responsibility to our employees, whether they be players or off-field resources. And so what we ended up doing was saying, okay, we now have to put the union into an emergency footing. And luckily, the government came through with the furlough scheme, which has helped us enormously. But what we had to do is make huge savings. And I said before, in many times at the AGMs and everything else, that in our business, activity drives cost. And so when you stop doing things, it's amazing how much money you can save. But by stopping doing things, playing being one of them, age grades, and making sure that again, our events teams and no events taking place, we've been able to really, really drive the cost down, make the big savings that we needed to make. But it was never going to be enough to replace the revenue that we lost from the Six Nations and also from live rugby generally. But what it did do is gave us an opportunity to talk to government around just what we wanted to do and what our ambitions were as we went through this process. And I have to say, the government came in with a really meaningful and swift response. They came back with a £15 million grant and a £5 million loan. And that has enabled us to rebuild our balance sheet. You know, we've been able to repair it. It won't go all the way to repairing it, but it's gone an awful long way to making sure that we can maintain the business between the big ravine that we just fallen down. As I said before, we were a strong business going into the recession. We'll be a strong business going out of the recession because a latent demand will look after a great deal of our revenue loss. The big thing is trying to get over that precipice that we fell down when COVID was at its height. I can just say that the moment we chose there were three options that were in front of us in terms of financial planning. We chose what we said option three, and we're trading to that option three budget now, which will hopefully get us to the end of this financial year in decent shape with the government loan. We've also refinanced the business ourselves privately through the Bank of Scotland, and we're in a really strong financial position. And when we come out on the other side of this, we will have the resources, we will have the money to be able to reset this business and return to rugby, whether it's a women's game, whether it's a pro game. But the most important thing we have to do is get into the community game, get it restarted safely, bring back the people who we may have lost, the people we've attracted, to keep them in the clubs, and make sure that we're ready to take advantage of what I believe, as we just said before with Chris, I think there's going to be a real passion about community rugby at rugby every level as we are able to restart.
So, Mark, you're talking about the financial and commercial elements as well as the rugby developments, the grassroots elements, with two people who are unfortunately leaving the business in Sheila Begbie and Dominic Mackay, two guys who you worked incredibly close with over the years. How sad are you to see them go, and what's the planning process at the moment for replacing them, I suppose?
Oh, I'm personally sad to see them go, but I'm actually delighted for both of them. Sheila's going to a well-earned retirement. She's done an incredible job since she came across from Scottish football. She looked at the women's game and overhauled that. Now she's been into our rugby development department and completely changed that too. She's a fantastic ambassador advocate for what we've been doing. But I think she wants to move on and enjoy retirement, and asked us to stay on already probably longer than she wanted to or longer she planned to. So we've got to let her leave the building in when she wants to, at a time of her choosing. So she won't be going until the summer. But no, absolutely terrific stint, and her legacy will be long remembered. As far as Dom's concerned, he's got a dream job, hasn't he? He's going to Glasgow Celtic. I know he's had a tough entree, no doubt, when he gets through the door, because it's not been perhaps the season they wanted. But Dominic has shaped the strategy, both commercially and importantly here, over the last 12, 13 years he's been here. Key member of the transformation of the union itself. On a personal level, I can't thank him enough for the work he's done here. And again, somebody that leaves a legacy, a proper legacy of achievement. And I'm sure it'll be super successful over at Celtic Park too.
Well, Mark, really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast and giving us that update. Really insightful. And it's really positive as well to hear from you with everything that's happening around the game. So I know you're a busy man, so we'll let you go now. But Mark Dodson, Chief Executive of Scottish Rugby, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Jim. Cheers, pleasure.
Well, let's look back at the pro team's fortunes at last weekend. Glasgow played on Friday and Edinburgh on the Saturday. Not the results that both teams wanted. Let's look at Glasgow first then. Al, Rachel, I know you're casting an eye over that match. Rachel, thoughts on that game and that performance?
Yeah, I actually thought Glasgow's performance was one of their better performances in recent months. It was quite a loose game, I would say. There was a lot of to and fro and playing all over the place. But it was exciting to watch, and a lot of good performances as well. I thought Jamie Dobie, again, I feel like we talk about him a lot on the podcast at the moment, but he really was just a complete live wire. He was absolutely everywhere and creating opportunities every chance he got the ball. And another one I thought really stood out for me, and I always pick up a back row, but Ryan Wilson, I thought, played incredibly well when he was on the park, and he was absolutely melting everyone that got in his way. So yeah, no, it was a good game, and I think Glasgow were super unlucky to not come away with a win.
Yeah, agreed. I think the biggest thing for me is missing opportunities. So first 15-20 minutes of the game, there was 3, if not 4 or 5 metre lineouts. You've got to take them. That's the best teams in the league are the ones that get into the opposition 22, and even if they only get in there a handful of times, they always come away with points. And you know, Glasgow would be disappointed because they created enough opportunities to stretch that scoreboard out a little bit earlier. But like, I agree with you, with the players you picked out, I thought Jamie Dobie was utterly outstanding, and you know, very much backs up his call into the national team camp this week. But like, he is a guy who has clearly got a big future ahead of him. He's got two fantastic players at Glasgow to learn from as well, or three when you throw Sean Kennedy into the mix, who's a highly experienced nine as well. So you know, he's coming through brilliantly well.
I'm also at Edinburgh on Saturday. Again, just difficult result for them against a tough Munster opponent. Thoughts on that game? It seemed like a bit of a forwards battle and a kind of a pick and go game at times. What's your take on it?
Yeah, it was. It was 22-10 defeat to Munster. Munster are top of the conference, and they played well. They managed the conditions well. They managed the game well. The conditions had an effect. I mean, it was wet, but really, really windy, blustery in terms of probably windy enough to stop you doing what you'd plan to do, if that makes sense. But disappointing from Edna's point of view that they kind of out-physicaled a wee bit by Munster. Munster do that to a lot of players, but the players have this secondary effort and contact that I think works really hard. And you know, one of the tries, I think it was Donoghue's try, he's hit really hard, but you've got to stick the tackles. He just wriggles round and gets the ball down. There was a lot of instances of that second effort, that secondary kind of shove in the tackle or the contact that Munster do well, that allows you an inch, allows you 6 inches in behind the gain line, and you're on the ball, you know, and on the front foot. I do think Edinburgh could have done a little bit more in terms of just shifting the point of contact, but tough conditions. But yeah, they take back it up this week. They're at home to Scarlets, so I think it's a 12 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, BT Murrayfield. It's almost like a school game. Pretty much it'll be early for the players on Saturday, so a chance to back up a reasonably poor performance last week with hopefully a home win against the Scarlets, and Glasgow have it all to do. They're away to Leinster on Sunday after the international, so that's a big ask for the lads to go over there. So it's a big ask, but it's a big opportunity as well.
Yeah, it was a real forward battle. Probably a game that Rachel and Al, you would have loved to be involved in because the forwards are getting so much ball. But Mossy, maybe a game you're in the back line frustrated that you're not getting much ball.
Mossy used to come in a crash ball. He used to come in short off nine, trying to take a bit of workload off the forwards.
Nah, we'll just let that lot run into each other. That's what I thought at the time. But I generally do. Like, I still think even when the weather's as bad as that and the game's as physical and tight, I still think there was a couple of pieces of play that Edinburgh did that were really good. There was a back row move of scrum. Bill Matta was outstanding. Aroni Sow was outstanding. They were two key players in attack. And they combined, and I think as a result, Andrew Davidson got held up over the line. So when you move just a short pass, all it is a short pass. It doesn't have to be long and floaty passes in the wind. I think you can shift the point of contact a bit more and just almost interest other defenders rather than the same defenders all the time for the pick and go. But listen, it's a tough night, tough conditions, but a disappointing result.
And Andrew Davidson took what looked like a reasonably severe bang. Have we got an update on him?
Yeah, Edinburgh put out an announcement shortly after the game because they were getting lots of messages, and it looked like he joined his teammates in the changing room after, and he was okay. So I believe that it was one of those ones that looked far worse than it was, but I believe he's okay, which is great to hear. Now, I'm going to come to you quickly for story time, because Munster was always a battle, especially with Glasgow, a really tight, kind of abrasive affair. One of the games that stands out for me, if I remember, might have been 2014-15 season. I think you were actually Waterboy, but you might remember it, and it was involved Nico Matawala.
You're selling this well, Jim.
I think he's been dropped.
I think you were injured.
Yeah,
I did you
a disservice there. You were injured, and it was a game between Glasgow Munster at Scotstoun, and do you remember Nico was having a bit of a tough time with the Munster boys and Don O'Callaghan as well, and there was a lot going on in that game.
I was convinced that Nico had bitten him.
That's right.
And it escalated during the game and escalated after the game as well, like post. But it's the closest I've ever been to getting involved in fisticuffs where I wasn't playing because Nico, the final whistle went and Nico made a beeline for the tunnel only to be cut off by Donica and a couple of the other Munster boys. So I found myself in the middle of Nico, who was no way going to be stepping in front of me. And Donica was reasonably upset. And as I say, Nico, I wouldn't say he was cowering, but there's a photo which he's pretty much cowering and pushing me forward. And as you rightly point out, I'm wearing the water carrier's bib. Managed to take a little bit of the sting out of the situation at that point, as you can imagine I would have been, just saying all the right things, and then we let the authorities deal with it from then on.
Well, that's all from us here on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.